The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Welcome, everyone, to this edition of H2O, our first one of 2015. Jason Hunt here, sitting across from Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And we're both still...
We've been a little under the weather.
We have. It timed out right because, you know, it's holidays and we're not recording and we're on vacation and whatnot. But, you know, it's...
Yeah,
it kind of stinks to be sick when you're visiting family, but also it's nice that we've been sick when we're not having to do this.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that says of me that I'm happy that we didn't miss anything on this.
It says
on this
you're enthusiastic about what we do.
It's a passion, man. I'm passionate, and
either that or you need to get out of the bunker.
Well, I'm told still. That I do need to get out more, but I have been getting out more. You know, for the record, I've actually been out and socialized with people a little bit more often of late. So
it's good.
I guess
it's okay to be out with people.
I just
other people are not the enemy. Well, not all other people.
Not all the people.
Some people are actually nice people.
Just because you think they're after you doesn't mean they aren't.
Right. Just because you think you're paranoid doesn't mean you aren't paranoid.
That's right. Wait, what was that? What? So
the voices.
So in between all of the and the we're going to try to get through this. Some of that was fake, and we're going to just kind of freewheel a little bit today, looking at. Stuff that's coming up in 2015 because it's the beginning of the year and there's a ton of stuff that's going to be going on here.
There's a ton of films coming out that are just, you know,
well,
science
TV
fiction
shows.
And fantasy and television stuff coming out.
Television shows.
This is going to be a big year for film just for series that are coming back. You've got... there's a film about some obscure... comic book team called the Avengers or something
like that.
Yeah, that's coming out.
But it's not the West Coast Avengers.
It's
man,
not the,
I'm so disappointed.
You're weird. Well, that's because we all want Squirrel Girl.
That's right. Well, sure. her new book apparently is selling pretty well.
Well, yeah, because she's a fun character.
And Howard the Duck.
We could have
Squirrel Girl and Howard the Duck in the same
phase
in
four.
The same, yeah, there you go. Right? The new Fantastic Four.
There we go. Ooh, hey.
That could be Marvel Studios' version of the Fantastic Four. Howard the Duck, She-Hulk.
Squirrel Girl.
And who would you put?
Oh, wow.
Doctor Strange.
There we go.
Doctor Strange.
Oh, that would be fun.
That would, wouldn't it?
Well, don't we have a Terminator? Terminator coming out this year?
We got Terminator Genesis.
Right. We've got
Avengers Age of Ultron. That little science fiction thingy at the end of the year that people have been talking about a little often.
Star Wars. Yeah.
And then,
we've got
Mad Max Fury Road.
Mad Max.
In May 15th.
Which, you know, for a film that has kind of been stuck in development hell forever.
Yeah.
Or having the long production schedule that once they actually started shooting, how long did it take? It took forever to shoot that movie.
That was something.
But the previews, the two previews that have been out, they look amazing. I'm really excited. I'm actually excited about a new Mad Max movie.
Yeah, it actually does look like it's in that same category as the first two, at least. Thunderdome, not so much because it was a little bit more self-contained.
Thunderdome was an interesting film because Thunderdome of all the films ends up looking like a product of its time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It definitely does.
And you can, it's very interesting. You look at some films that do not age well, and that might be a whole show for us right there because there's some really, really big science fiction films and fantasy films that have just not aged.
Well, there's TV shows too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think with television, you're automatically looking at smaller budgets and a lot of compromises to make science fiction television, especially back in the day. Now, you know, when the way that they've really since Battlestar Galactica, The way that they're treating it as, you know, they're putting tons of money into the films, into the TV shows.
Yeah.
But you look at a movie like Logan's Run,
mm-hmm.
or
Silent Running.
Oh, Silent Running holds up better. But the Omega Man, Charlton Heston, that film is such a product of the 70s.
Saturn 3.
Kirk Douglas. Another one that doesn't age well.
Capricorn 1. You know what one still holds up is Hangar 18. Hangar 18 still is a pretty good, solid... For what it was.
You know, yeah.
It's a B movie. No, it's a low budget. A B film. But it still holds up. You know, there's not a whole lot in there that you look at it and you just go, ew, what were they thinking?
Yeah.
It's still, you know, internal logic-wise, story-wise.
How many people were in Capricorn 1? I mean, well, that was an incredible cast for the time.
Yeah.
That's a film that it's interesting. You look at it and go, wow. The conspiracy just doesn't make any sense.
And yet, we get Ascension out of sci-fi.
Yeah.
And it's essentially the same thing. It's Capricorn 1 with... It's Capricorn 1 and Dallas.
Yeah. Yeah, confession, folks. I made it to the first episode of Ascension, and I sat there when I don't care.
I forced myself to watch all three episodes. Yeah, I did just the little quick... fast review because I didn't really want to devote too much time to it because at that point I'm like, why am I watching this?
I was massively disappointed for the folks at home. I don't know if we want to give this away if you haven't seen it and you still want to. We're not going to tell you not to see it, but at the same time, I can definitely say that it's not what
you
think it is.
It's not what it was promoted to be.
Right.
Let's put it that
right.
way because
and that's that disappointed
because
me a lot.
The whole thing with Dave Stern and Bill McGoldrick and all of the new guys coming in, all the new blood, all the new suits mm-hmm. in charge, the marching orders have been get something, you know, space opera mm-hmm. and a big budget miniseries.
Right.
And this was sort of supposed to be both. Mm-hmm. And we got there and we're like, oh, they've launched... Well, first of all, how do you launch a secret mission that big in 1963? But, you know, past that, because, you know, they did the same thing with Khan.
Sure. Right.
You know, in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. And Greg Cox wrote the book, the two Khan books
right.
that explained how they did that.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. But, excuse me, you have this secret mission in 1963, this generation ship that gets launched, and the premise
is
just
really
it's interesting.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, well, what are the things going to be happening in, you know, 50 years out from,
because it's, you know, it's in a bubble. I mean, it's
yeah,
it's,
and the it, culture is going to be completely different.
Yeah,
it's going to evolve
you could,
a different
you
way.
Could play with that in some really interesting ways. That's a the generation ship idea is it's used over and over and again in hard science fiction novels for that very reason, because you can explore what humanity does to itself when it's, you know, there are no outside influences. How long do things stay the same? How quickly do things change?
And the potential was, oh, this is going to be on a ship, because that's the one thing that all of the fans, everybody that was reading news about this, were all saying, oh, this is great because we're finally getting a show on a ship in space.
Right.
And it wasn't. And I think that was one of the
that
big...
That would be the spoiler, folks.
That would be the spoiler. But that... Well, since we were talking about Capricorn 1...
Anybody, right, yeah, that's true.
Well, selected people in the audience would get the reference to Capricorn 1 if you're of an age,
right,
as we are. And I think that's one of the... That's one of the benefits of our site. And we've talked about this before, the fact that we appeal to such a broad age range because we do bring a perspective of having been there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 1977 was real for us. It's not something just written down and we just look back and say, oh yeah, that's when Star Wars came out. No, that's when we went to see
right.
Star Wars. You know, there's a whole different perspective, you know, from people that are our age. You know, and you talk about this with other people is You know, if it didn't happen, you know, if it happened before you were born, it's not real to you. There are people like that. Well, the thing with Paul McCartney here a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, good Lord, yes.
Kanye West paired up with Paul McCartney at some show, and Twitter just blew up.
Who is this Paul McCartney?
Who is this Paul McCartney guy? And some people were like, oh, that's really great that Kanye West has given this guy a boost.
Right. You know? Well, years ago, I actually had some kid that I was working with back when I was in the movie theater business. Who actually asked me if I knew anything about this Paul McCartney guy in the band Wings. And I was like...
Do you know Paul McCartney was in a band before Wings?
Exactly. So I was like, wow, yeah, I might have heard of him.
Yeah, and I think we've told this story before.
A couple of three songs.
In high school, I had a friend of mine who actually heard somebody in the record store say, hey, look, Paul McCartney was in a band before Wings, and he almost just came over the aisle at her.
Yeah.
Because how do you escape the influence of the Beatles?
You know what? I would love to say, I was just listening. They're NPR has been doing a rhythm week for drummers.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the major drummers from rock and roll.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been really, really interesting.
Was Yngwie Malmsteen a drummer, or is he a guitar player? I can't remember.
But they've been, you know, talking about various people who, you know, the two drummers for James Brown, who have been friends since they met each other, and they've all through the James Brown years, all up to now, they're still really, really great friends.
Yeah.
Still amazing drummers. Didn't like James Brown at all. Hardest working man in the show business. Not a nice guy.
Yeah.
But the thing is that you look at some of these folks, you're listening to them talk, and I realize my depth and breadth of musical knowledge, a lot of which came out of how my father, the music that my father was playing when I was a kid.
Yep.
So the Beatles, Three Dog Night, Pink Floyd, Jimi Hendrix, classical music, the blues, old school country.
Elvis Presley.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Johnny Cash.
My dad is not a jazz fan, so there was not that. So, but I picked up jazz later and became a real big jazz fan. But the thing is that I got pretty lucky for having that breadth and depth. And there's a lot of folks, I mean, there's huge chunks. Jazz and old school country and old blues. You know, so much of that is massively influential on rock and roll, but there's a lot of people who don't have any idea about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So it blows my mind.
The one thing, you know, and pull this back into Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wait, what?
The fact that they released an actual cassette tape.
Oh, I loved that. That was
of the mix of the awesome mix number one. I want to get it. I want to get one. Now I've got. You know, I gave my son a CD of the awesome mix one, and I'm in Barnes & Noble the other day buying the Shakespeare Return of the Jedi because nobody got it for me for Christmas.
Those horrible people.
Well, you know, it's a trade-off. They spend money on other gifts, so you can't get that. So, okay, fine. But I'm getting that. And as I'm walking out, I'm walking toward the checkout because this is brilliantly placed. It's there at the island right before you get there. They have this display that's got LPs.
Yeah, yeah.
Vinyl.
Uh-huh, right.
Real records.
Yep.
And right there on the front of it is Guardians of the Galaxy, 2-disc set. That one side is the Awesome Mix 1.
Right.
That's one record. The other record is the score.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, this is good. I'll get this. And I just started looking through some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
Fleetwood Mac Rumors was in there. AC/DC, Led Zeppelin.
Yep.
And I'm looking at this stuff. I'm thinking, I've got the originals of these. I know these are reproduced. I know these are copies. These are new
issues. Yeah, they're new presses.
New presses. But I thought, how cool is that vinyl's coming back and that they're putting this stuff out? But then I also look through and I find, not Maroon 5. Yeah, maybe Maroon 5, Lorde.
Yeah.
She's got an album. They're the younger
They're
ones,
releasing new stuff on
They're
vinyl,
going to vinyl as well.
My dad, that's one of the things my dad asked for Christmas, was a record player.
Oh, yeah.
To replace the one that he had years ago that you know, and hey, you know, there was just no point. And getting by, and so for a while, when his broke, he just didn't replace it. Well, now he decided he wanted to replace it. The interesting thing I saw about the new record players, so you can plug them into your computer.
Yeah, they get and a USB port.
And you can download the song you're playing off. You can, you know, you're basically, it'll pull it into your computer.
Yeah.
Which I think is fantastic. It's a neat way of combining the two technologies. And I actually think that's great.
I was reading an article the other day about the process of archiving data.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody wrote something about they were going through something in the attic or a collection or something. They had found photographs of their grandfather, great grandfather.
Sure.
And he had been voted most homeliest and was also a Popeye impersonator. He would go and make appearances as Popeye the Sailor Man. I am what I am type. You know, for those of you who don't know who Popeye the Sailor Man is, I'm sorry. But he would do it. Would do appearances, but the only thing that they had from that time were these photographs,
right?
And they're real, printed on paper, physical photographs. And people were starting, and the gist of this article was talking about how, you know, we save everything digitally. Everything's digital. Mm-hmm. We save it to a hard drive. We save it to a disk. We save it to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And 5 years. 10 years, it's gone, unless you move it.
Right,
you're going to have to actually physically move, and we've run into this here.
Well,
you know, the fact that hard drives die, the data is still there.
You just can't get to it.
You can't get to it unless you're willing to pay $1,500, $2,000 to pull it off of there, because they got to open it up in a clean room. It's been and I'm reading this, and then there's the vinyl, and then. You know, there's all of this, you know, talk about what the aftermath is going to be of the Sony hack and the interview going directly to digital and video on demand and direct downloads and all of this. I know that how odd would it be that movies end up going the digital route and everything else goes back to analog. Records, you know, we get records, we get books, magazines, you know, and I've got all this, you know, Starlog magazine spread out on the table here. I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, well, what if this kind of stuff comes back? You know, people start getting an idea of what the digital means and what exactly you're going to lose when all of that goes away, because you don't have physical copies of anything anymore.
Well, I think there's the other side of that, which is we save things in a way that we don't think about the space that they're taking up. So you might have, I mean, how many photos do you have on your phone?
About 300.
Okay. How many of them are you going to look at again?
I just keep the ones that I use, and then I get rid of the rest of them.
All right, but for most people, I have, you know, 300 photos on my phone, and I never look at them.
Right.
Or I've saved all the photos to my hard drive. What are you going to do with them? All them photos to my hard drive.
You put them on social media, and then you never look at them again.
Yeah. You know, I don't think we're going to see it with magazines specifically, because when we were watching Agent Carter the other night, there was a scene with somebody was reading a newspaper.
Yeah.
And I miss newspapers, because the little tiny things that we have now that are like, what, 10 inches, 12 inches wide? Are not newspapers.
What, you mean like tablets?
No, I mean like you go pick up the Kansas City Star. Mm-hmm. They're like this wide, you know. They're really. Like, well, I mean they're tiny.
I haven't looked at the newspaper.
Newspapers have shrunk, and part of it, you know, there's paper costs and printing costs, all these things. We're not going to see the resurgence of the magazine for the very simple fact that nobody's willing to spend that money anymore.
Right.
But
the magazine format, I think, may get a little bit more of a resurgence, at least electronically. When you look at things like Omni reboot.
Oh yeah, okay, that sort of thing. Sure.
You know,
yeah,
we talk about some of the old things coming back. We've heard rumblings about the real Omni magazine coming back. Fangoria has announced at some point plans to bring Starlog magazine back.
Right.
And
that'd be nice.
It would, but you know that's what we do.
Yeah, I know.
We're the new Starlog, right? That would be fun. That's I'm looking through all of these. I pulled a lot of these old Starlogs out of the box, and I'm just looking at some of the articles, and you know, art direction and production design articles and interviews with directors, and interviews with actors, and interviews with writers, and all of these things, interviews with comic book people,
right?
And I'm thinking, you know, the articles are longer than what we would put on the internet, but it's still the same kind of content that I'd like to do. And that actually circles us back around to what we want to see. What do we want to do in 2015?
Yeah.
Because we could talk about, you know, all of these things that we have plans to do. You know, Planet Comic Con and some of the other events that we'd like to go to, and some of the different content that we'd like to put on our site. But you know, it's this. I'm wondering how much of this is cyclical, how much of this is coming back because people are getting tired of the internet.
Well, I don't know.
I think people are starting to understand that the internet takes up too much of our attention and focus, and not necessarily in a positive way, because, you know, of all the stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw something the other day. I don't know. It was an email that I got. I think it was on one of the newsletters that I get, mm-hmm. you know, on the media stuff, talking about how reality shows are starting to diminish.
Yay.
And as soon as I read that, I was like, oh.
Well, I think people get excited about the new, okay? When it comes to things like reality shows, of course, you know, studios like them because they're cheap to make.
Right.
But I think for the technology, we you know, there's the new stuff rolls out, and I remember when
But it's not just the technology. I think the content.
Well, sure, is sure. Also, certainly content. Well, content is always king.
The society aspect of it. I think people are starting to get tired of the ugly.
Oh, sure. Well, I think that more people are honestly realizing that when you, and of course this is an oddly timely thing since the topic of free speech and is very, very much in the news right now. Free speech is a very, very important thing. We're big fans. There are consequences to free speech, good and ill.
Right.
Not remotely saying what happened in Paris should be considered a consequence of free speech. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we see online all the time is the loudest people are usually the smallest.
Mm-hmm.
Not only the smallest people, but the smallest in number, for the most part. And I think that while we certainly, you know, the leaps in technology, the stuff that we can do all this cool stuff, right?
Yeah.
But it's kind of like when Amazon started selling books, and everybody in the book world, everyone in the business world was like, the bookstores are all doomed. Mm-hmm. Everyone was just getting their books online. Didn't happen. Some bookstores have gone out of business, but guess what? That's called the world. Yeah. Businesses go out of business, they come into business.
But that's no different from television going to kill the movies.
Sure. Well, but you know, the Nook, or you know, the iPad, all these different things they're going to destroy the book.
Yes.
Right. The book is still being published. The books are still doing well. Books are doing fine, kids. The technology, we all tend to jump onto it. We sit there and grab it, and we run with it. And when it's big and flashy and cheap, a lot of this stuff is relatively inexpensive.
Yeah.
Even if it's made well, it's relatively inexpensive right now.
I was guest hosting Big Dumb Fun Show Monday night, and my son was with me. He's sitting on the couch over there in the studio and had a book with him.
Mm-hmm.
It was an actual book. And Aaron Gnert, who's the producer over there, he said, is that an actual book in his hand? Yeah, he still reads books. He reads the, you know, he'll turn the pages and read the book.
Well, you know,
I can't get him to read very much on the Kindle.
We got lots of books for Christmas in my family. We got books. We gave books. We didn't just get books that, you know, oh, this is the latest thing from so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
This was the, oh, mom reads this series. She's going to want this.
Yes.
Or, ooh, Tim will find this funny, which is exactly, you know, which is almost entirely what I got. One of the books I asked for Christmas. Everything else I got was, you know.
Just because they know you and they think you'll like it.
And they were right. So, you know, it's. I think there is a tendency, especially when you look at something like Starlog or Omni, Bob Guccione, the Penthouse guy.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Well, it's
a business.
It's well, but not only that. I mean, this was actually a labor of love for him.
Yeah,
you know, this was like a thing. This was, Omni was a, you know, it unfortunately, you know, like everything, you know, profit killed it. You know,
right.
Like or profits, but. It's I always you know, you'd find this at the school library.
Yes.
I'd be like, okay, sure.
And lack of profit is not a problem for us yet.
No,
we don't make any.
gotta have some to have lacks be an issue. But it's, you know, you look at some of this stuff and these anthology things. They used to say that anthologies were kind of dead. Remember mm-hmm. remember when you did that? Mm-hmm. And yet you look and science fiction and horror and fantasy and anthologies, they've been published for years and years and years. There's always a new one popping up.
Well, and Amazing Stories is doing some of that still. Mm-hmm. You know, they published an anniversary issue, I think back in September.
Right.
And Steve Davidson is wanting to do more of those. He's wanting to, you know, they right now it's kind of in a blog format like ours,
mm-hmm.
but. You know, they do collect original fiction and their, you know, short stories and essays about scientific concepts and stuff. And they're doing the same kind of thing that Amazing Stories has been doing forever.
Right.
It's just they're doing it online.
Well,
the print edition is a special deal.
Right. And I think that, you know, some people maybe in the publishing world or in the, excuse me, in the genre media world saw that things weren't selling the way they used to because of whatever the various reasons why magazines kind of took it in the teeth over the last several years. And they looked at it and went, well, people just don't want this, but people did want it. And, you know, you'd get people who are, you know, one of the things the internet is really good for is you can occasionally get stuff in bite-sized amounts on the internet. You can read a short story on the internet.
There's a site that I found, and I get an email from them every now and then. It's called Lo-Fi Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
And it's low-budget indie projects,
mm-hmm.
you know, short films.
Yeah.
And I actually submitted one of mine. I gave them Species Felis Dominaris.
Oh, okay, cool.
And they publish, I guess you could say, they distribute new short science fiction films.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them are good.
Yeah.
Not all of them are, you know, big flashy super special effects or anything like that, but they're all science fiction.
Right.
And the idea of them being lo-fi, you know, it's called lo-fi sci-fi because they're basic. They're
right.
You know, you're not doing all of the big bells and whistles and the million-dollar budgets and stuff. It's, you know, a lot of this stuff is shoestring.
Sure.
But I think we're going to start seeing more of that. Especially because you get comic book editors, you know, telling people, you know, if you're just starting out, publish your own stuff online.
Right.
You know, just put something out there, find an audience, mm-hmm. and you start building that way, especially for writers. Because it's very hard to evaluate a writer's work without seeing the visual.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think we're going to start seeing more of that, too. We're going to see, you know, more online development of material that then gets picked up. Well, we saw Vimeo has just signed a deal with Ron Howard and Brian Grazer
mm-hmm.
and Discovery to do original programming on Vimeo.
Right.
And they're picking up two guys out of YouTube who have short films, and they're developing those into bigger projects. So yeah, I think that's where the YouTube is almost like the farm team now.
Yeah, well, what's interesting is that if you are an established video platform, you already have your infrastructure for releasing original content. And I think that is a really interesting the opportunity here for more stories to be told is just really great. On the other hand,
the opportunity for more stories to be told is not always all that great.
Well, and there was a guy, and I can't remember his name. He's a psychiatrist, and he gave a TED talk not too long ago about choices and how we have too many.
I can see that.
And it's on a logical level, more choice is a good thing. Okay.
Right.
Because not everyone likes the same things. And he uses the example of breakfast cereal. Okay. I don't like Cheerios. I like cornflakes. You like
Cocoa Puffs.
Cheerios. You don't like cornflakes. We each have a choice. Okay.
Yes.
But we can want to eat the same things every day. So you decide you want Cocoa Puffs. So you go out and get Cocoa Puffs. So now you have two choices. Mm-hmm. Now you can decide which one you want. And I can go out and pick something else. The problem is that, you know, we don't just have two or four. We have like 50.
Right.
He gave a great example about going out to get a new pair of jeans. Finally, he said, these jeans, I got to replace these jeans. And the clerk said, do you want button fly, zipper fly, tapered leg, flared leg, low cut, loose cut, and he sat there and went, I want the ones that you could get when they were the only ones you could get. And the clerk didn't know what to do. And it took him an hour to buy a pair of jeans. But he said he walked out with the best fitting pair of jeans he had ever had in his life.
No.
But he wasn't happy.
Right, because of the rigmarole. The rigmarole. Finding it.
He got what he wanted, but the experience wasn't pleasant. And what turns out is that when we're given too many choices, we get frustrated because we can't choose. It's harder.
You go into lockdown. What's that word? Analysis paralysis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited about the explosion of new platforms for entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I think it's also, and this is let me make this very clear. I'm very excited about it. I think the pros are much higher than the cons in this regard.
Especially for us, because we're going to try at some point to get into doing some original content.
Exactly. But at the same time, I think that, and we've talked about this before, the potential that with something like, say, superheroes are huge right now.
Mm-hmm.
Superheroes. It's true. I've heard tell.
Really?
Yeah. A couple of small little pictures.
Yeah.
You worry. You're concerned that you're reaching a saturation point where you're gonna, you know, flood the market essentially, and then all of a sudden the bottom's gonna fall out.
Well, people have been saying that's gonna happen for the last 5 years or so.
Oh, sure.
It just doesn't look like it's gonna happen.
Sure, but I think that
at some point it has to.
Oh yeah, because it always does. This stuff always goes in cycles. I mean, there aren't that many Westerns made anymore.
Although when HBO brings Westworld back, maybe that kicks the door open. We can start doing it a little bit more.
Maybe it will. Western. But again, there's a reboot that I'm not upset about.
Yeah.
That's an interesting. I mean, I think it was something that was kind of an. They stopped making those stories. They only made two films.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a time when you didn't have 40,000 sequels, but still there felt like there was more to the story to be told if you wanted to.
But back then you didn't have franchises,
right? You really didn't.
Except Planet of the Apes, that was probably one of the first ones.
Sure,
that
but Planet of the Apes was
into a series.
Definitely regarded as a B pictures.
Yeah,
It was definitely
all science fiction was back then. Yeah. Before Star Wars.
Yeah, well, and but some of those B pictures, Forbidden Planet.
Oh yeah.
Ah, that film is amazing.
Fantastic.
The George Powell time machine.
My kid, speaking of George Powell, my kid asked, was it yesterday? Yesterday or today? Asked to see the War of the Worlds.
The Powell one?
The Powell one.
Nice.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Him.
Yeah, so.
And so instead, you went and got him the War of the Worlds television series from the 90s.
That may be on Netflix. I'll have to look.
It probably is.
Well, because he's been on a Godzilla kick. Mm-hmm. He's been watching all the old Toho movies.
Sure.
And I actually found, I didn't even know this existed. When I was doing some Christmas shopping. I ran into a 30-episode animated Godzilla that fires off right after the Roland Emmerich movie.
Right. Yes, I know the series.
I never knew that it existed. I opened it and I was like, oh, it's a Godzilla cartoon. He'll watch it. You know, he's not gonna be concerned too much about that. But he opened it up and he looked at it. He goes, wait, this is based on the 1988 one, isn't it? Like, yeah. He's like, okay. So yeah, and it was fine. But he recognized
right.
It was a different Godzilla because sure. He's been watching all of the old Toho movies. Mm-hmm. He's been, you know, Final Wars and all this. He's got this idea now for a new Godzilla fan film and all these different things.
Nice.
And I'm poking holes in the story. Like, okay, how do you answer this question? How do you answer this question? He's mm-hmm. coming up with answers. He's doing a story. So I think the younger generation, you know, not to sound too much like an old man, but I think the younger generation is starting to develop an appreciation for the classics, the originals, a little bit more now, maybe.
Well, I think
we can hope.
You know, what's interesting is that some of the stuff that has been rebooted or brought back, or a new version has been a new riff on that kind of story has come up. Is that it gives you a sense a chance to go back and look at some of that original stuff.
Yeah.
And in some cases, that leads you on a very fun journey to find things that are really cool that you didn't even know existed. In some cases, it reminds you why the first thing was mm-hmm. kind of forgotten in the first place. But
speaking of things that are really cool you might not know existed.
Yes.
Superherostuff.com has stuff.
They all have all kinds of stuff. Yes. Now, you should know they exist.
You should. But, you know, a lot of people maybe don't know exactly what all they have.
Oh, well, that's
so
possible. Because they have a lot of things.
They do have a lot of stuff. And they are a sponsor of our show here, and we're happy to have them. We're very appreciative of their support. And so we are going to recommend that when you're done listening to this podcast, you go visit superherostuff.com. You can click on a link from our show page, or you can just type it in your address bar here on your smart device, mobile device, tablet, computer, wherever. Superherostuff.com. And we are going to take a break, let you listen to a message from them, and then we will be back to actually get back on topic, talking about things we're looking forward to in 2015. Stand by.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Oh, this is so cool!
That is the sound of another satisfied customer getting his superhero stuff teleported to his doorstep from superherostuff.com. When you need your Batcave or Fortress of Solitude to be bigger on the inside, jump on the World Wide Web and head over to superherostuff.com at warp speed. Licensed merchandise from across the fandom multiverse.
Oh, this is so cool!
Only at superherostuff.com.
Hey everyone, Leslie Walker here, inviting you to join me and the rest of the Sci-Fi for Me crew every week as we dive into the details of the TV shows that you and we love. Did you miss your favorite show this week? Or perhaps you need someone to talk to about that latest plot twist and the implications. Well, maybe your friends don't geek out over shows like Supernatural, Grimm, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like what your friends over at Sci-Fi for Me do, but hey, it's what we live for. So join us for the latest at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Our transmitters are made from hand wavium. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Back on H2O, Jason Hunt and Timothy Harvey here.
Hello.
And let's kind of swing back on topic, talking about things that we're looking forward to in 2015. And I think, you know, we've kind of covered some of the movies that are coming out.
Although I do want to point out that I believe it's the 9th, January 9th,
which is tomorrow, the day after we're recording this.
Mm-hmm. Predestination, the new Ethan Hawke.
Ah, yes.
Film based on All You Zombies by Heinlein. I recommend this film, folks. Go if it's I'm not sure if it's going to be out in theaters or if it's going to be just available online or for I don't know if
the
it's going
demand.
To be. I think it's got a theatrical run. I highly recommend this film. It's a solid, smart science fiction thriller, and it's a pretty good adaptation of a Heinlein story, especially yep. making a short story into a feature.
Oh, sure.
So I was pleased. I was very pleased with it.
I saw an interview with Ethan Hawke, read pieces of it. They were talking to him about, you know, Doctor Strange, the fact that he was in the running to play right. Stephen Strange. And one of the reasons why he didn't take it is the time commitment outside of production.
Right, sure.
You know, the press junkets and the convention appearances and the interviews and the this and this and that and the other and all of the stuff that you end up getting committed to
sure, sure.
outside of just
making
acting and yeah. making a movie. And that's one of the things that he didn't want to commit to at the time is to do something like that. And it makes a certain amount of sense because we've heard some of the other people talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, Scarlett Johansson's made comments about it. Chris Evans has said some stuff about it. So it's really interesting to see that there are still some actors out there. Well, and some directors too. Peter Jackson says he doesn't want to do a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
You know, okay. It's, you know, superhero movie. That's fine for what they want to do, but I don't want to do that. And, right. and you know, you think Marvel is such this massive juggernaut thing that everybody wants to be a part of because it's so successful. But your flip side of that is when you're part of this juggernaut, you can't get off the train.
Right,
anytime
yeah.
soon.
Yeah, you're.
and that train is going through. We've got Agent Carter on the air now.
Yeah.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comes back on March 3rd, mm-hmm. my birthday. Not going to suggest anything to anybody on that. But
I believe you're getting a present.
What?
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is coming back
Agents
on your birthday.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is my birthday, yes. Okay.
You're
that's
welcome.
That's my birthday present. Thank you. Thank you. See how that worked out? So we've got that. Age of Ultron
right.
is next,
mm-hmm.
followed by Ant-Man.
Right.
And then we have Star Wars: The Force Awakens at the end of the year in December.
Right.
We have is the new Harry? Where's the Harry Potter? Is that this year or is that going to be 2016?
I want to say it's 2016
because Batman versus Superman is 2016.
Right. We've got Strange Magic is coming out at the end of the month, this month, which is a George Lucas movie.
Oh yes, that's right.
Okay.
Yes,
it's the
that's
it's
animated,
an animated
right?
film. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Project Almanac. Have you seen the trailer for that?
I have. It looks
yeah.
interesting.
It's also the end of this month.
We also have a trailer that just dropped for a movie called The Lazarus Effect.
Yeah.
Which looks to be sort of a horror, a hard horror version of Flatliners.
Right.
I mean, that's the same concept, that same principle.
Right,
is,
with a cast you don't normally expect to see in that kind of picture.
Yeah.
So, which is kind of cool.
What's his name?
Olivia Munn.
Olivia Munn.
No, it's not
Donald Glover.
Donald
Glover's in it. Which, you know.
Olivia Wilde.
Yeah.
But yeah, Donald Glover. Yeah, so not really your usual.
Although that would be interesting to see Olivia Munn doing something like that, too.
I would be fine with that. Jupiter Ascending finally comes out. Remember Jupiter Ascending?
Unless they move it again.
Well, right, but it's right now.
But
it's,
everything that I'm hearing out of it is pretty positive. People who have seen pieces of it and whatnot.
Yeah, so February 6th. That comes out.
We got another Mockingjay.
We do.
Mockingjay
we do.
Part 2
which,
is coming out this year.
Which I think, I mean, that's, a lot of people are excited about that.
Do you see what they're doing with Game of Thrones? Game of Thrones is going to get an IMAX treatment.
Yeah,
the
I saw
last,
that.
The last two episodes of season 4
mm-hmm.
and the season 5 trailer are going to drop, I think, in April.
Yeah.
And that's going to be in IMAX theaters. And from what I was reading and what we posted on our site, that is the first time that a TV series like that
mm-hmm.
is getting IMAX treatment to that extent.
Yeah, I would have to say I can't think of any other one that has.
Yeah, I mean, because you get, and it's different than. you know, the simulcast stuff like what you get in Doctor Who.
Right, right.
Or something like that. This is actually, you know, they are processing this for IMAX distribution.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be interesting to see how that plays out, because IMAX is trying to do more with content delivery. And it's interesting. It seems like a lot of these companies are starting to lean that direction in thinking of what they do as content generators rather than, oh, we make movies.
Right.
Because Les Moonves over at CBS was given an interview, I think that maybe over at TCA, was talking about, we're not just a TV network. We're a content generator. We're delivering content, because nobody is on any one platform anymore.
Right, right.
And you have all of the digital stuff.
You can't
stuff
be. If you're going to be in that kind of business, you cannot be on one platform.
Well, and we've run into it too, you know, on the social media side, because we sit there and go, oh, well, you know, you have to be on all of these different social media platforms in order to reach the audience. But on the discover on the content side, I'm looking at a headline as Discovery Channel. You know, on the content side, it's now more important that your focus becomes all of the different ways that you can get the material out to people. So, let's see, what else is coming out this year?
Remember the Jeff Bridges movie? The Seventh Son? Were you hearing about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That didn't come out yet?
No, well, it was supposed to come out 2 years ago. So I'm pretty sure it's coming out February 6th as well. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a bomb.
You think?
2 years delay?
Well, they delayed G.I. Joe, the G.I. Joe sequel for a year, and it did okay in the box office.
But was it any good?
You know, I have to admit, I didn't see it.
Oh, I didn't either, actually. Well, I did watch the first one, and I'm not sure how I feel about that, the fact that I did. It wasn't very good. Well,
I heard the second one may have been better than the first one, because it was more G.I. Joe than the first one.
That could be. No real desire. Kingsman, the Kingsman movie.
Yes.
The spy parody.
Yeah, that looks good.
Which is played very straight. But it's from Matthew Vaughn. So he did X-Men First Class and the first Kick-Ass movie. Did he just do the first one? I think he just did the first one.
I think so.
I don't think he did the second one. That looks like a lot of fun. What We Do in the Shadows is finally coming out to theaters on middle of February. And this is a New Zealand vampire movie. Vampire comedy. And watch this movie, folks. If you get a chance, if it's playing, I don't know how wide this is going to go. It's written by one of the Flight of the Conchords guys, Taika. It's Taika Waititi and Jermaine Clement. But it is a very funny film. It's been out in New Zealand for a while, but it is it's the second best vampire film I've seen in a while.
Really?
The first one would be, oh no, the Tom Hiddleston and Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yeah.
Which, another film, if you haven't seen it, folks, it's highly, highly recommended. This is What We Do in the Shadows, very funny, and not really getting a whole lot of press in the U.S. right now. So it'll come out next month, and I think that genre fans should enjoy it, especially if you don't like vampire movies.
Yeah.
If Twilight made you ill, you're probably going to like What We Do in the Shadows.
I got a heads up. Twilight has put out the three stories in a collection, all of them together.
Uh-huh, sure.
Extended cuts.
Oh, okay.
Special edition type thing. And I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, why would they add any more to it? But, you know, fans of it might get a kick out of it. Who knows? Hmm. I've run across this other one here, and I don't see where it's, when it's coming out, but I think it's coming out this year. It is a UFO conspiracy story called The Phoenix Incident.
The Phoenix Incident, huh?
It's a movie that was shot last year, and it is, the marketing on it is very, very much the viral video type of stuff. Kind of like what J.J. Abrams did for Cloverfield.
Oh, okay, sure.
Where you're starting to see just little bits and pieces online, and nobody really knows what it is. Well, it turns out it's a UFO conspiracy thriller. It's the feature film debut for a gaming director, a guy by the name of Keith Arum. He's done Call of Duty and Titanfall. It was shot last year. It's got foreign distribution deals that they signed back during the American film market in November.
Mm-hmm.
And it screens next week for buyers in Los Angeles. And they're talking about some transmedia deals maybe with some of that. But he's saying, you know, the idea is you'll be on your phone leaving the theater Googling the information to see if it's real. Is what who knows? I mean, the Phoenix Incident, named after a real event that occurred on March 13th, 1997 in Phoenix, Arizona, when thousands of people, including then State Governor Fife Symington, claimed to have simultaneously witnessed unexplainable lights in the night sky. So, you know, this is the same kind of thing like the Marfa lights.
Right.
Or the things that float around in Miami, Oklahoma. Mm. And you know, stuff you can't explain.
Right.
And so this is going to be one of those. But it's done, but it's, you know, it's a low budget.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, going through right now looking for distribution deals, but that could be coming out this year. And then we've got Kong Skull Island in development. I don't think that's going to be a 2015.
No,
that's
gonna be 2016. Yeah, I think so.
But you see, they're looking to add Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
I mean, J.K. Simmons and Tom Hiddleston are already on board, and now they're going to add Michael Keaton.
I mean, the quality is rising and making me a little less, why is this movie happening?
Well, here's my takeaway from it.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Keaton has a career again.
Oh, that's always, yeah, no complaints about that.
And I'm thinking Beetlejuice 2, the longer we go with Michael Keaton actually getting work, that gets him the notoriety and the praise like Birdman has.
Right.
Birdman was great.
Yeah.
I loved that movie. I don't think my takeaway from that movie was what the director was expecting. We've talked about that a little bit. We can analyze that at some point. But Michael Keaton, his career for a long time after Batman, you know, Mr. Mom and all of those, suddenly Michael Keaton was gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was playing the villain in some of these low budget, you know, horror movie things that nobody went and saw. And then he did a Herbie movie with Lindsay Lohan, and that was a pretty decent picture. It was fun.
You know, Lindsay Lohan had a career,
yeah, and talent. I mean, she's a very talented person. Don't get me wrong. I don't want anybody to misconstrue that comment, but she's a very talented actress. And when you see her in things like The Parent Trap or Mean Girls, you see that potential.
Yeah,
you see, man, she could just really blow up and be a huge star, you know, Nicole Kidman level type, you know, the big A-list type of actress. And then she just imploded.
Yeah.
And it's sad to see. But, you know, Herbie was a good movie. It was a fun movie.
Yeah.
And after that, I didn't see Michael Keaton in anything until Birdman. And now everybody's talking about Michael Keaton's performance in that movie.
Yeah.
And I haven't really seen.
Well, he was in the last RoboCop, in the RoboCop.
Yeah, but nobody saw that. Nobody saw that RoboCop. I saw he was in it, and I thought, why is he doing that? because it's a reboot and it's, you know, that, and, oh, okay, fine. He's playing a bureaucrat, corporate type. Why would he do? He needed the money.
Yeah.
That's what that deal is. But I haven't seen press on Michael Keaton.
Oh, yeah. No. This is...
of this nature since Clean and Sober.
Joe, yeah.
When
okay.
he did Clean yeah, yeah. and Sober, you remember when everybody came out and they
and
said...
no one expected Clean and Sober.
Right. I yeah. mean, and when... that was his first dramatic role, mm-hmm. and everybody went...
He's an act.
Actor. Yeah, that's right. And we're getting that same kind of reaction, the intensity of it,
mm-hmm.
coming out of Birdman. And yeah. I think we're going to see more of Michael Keaton actually getting work that matters.
Well,
especially to fans.
You know, he's one of those actors who, because he can do more than comedy, more than drama, he can do quite a bit. I mean, he's got a range. But I think he's going to end up one of those actors like Michael Keaton or Michael Caine, who he's going his the second part of his career,
right,
is going to be very long and very solid and very consistent.
I'm wondering if Kevin Costner is going to get a resurgence as well, coming out of Man of Steel.
I think what was the one he made a
He's got this one now that's coming out called Black and White.
Wait, before that, in between Man of Steel and now he did a political thriller, spy mm-hmm. thriller thing, which was okay. Mm-hmm. It was
well, and he was in the Jack Ryan reboot.
Right, which kind of just peh. No one yeah. really paid attention
well,
to it.
Anything I mean, with Chris Pine in it is peh.
He doesn't bother me so much. It's just I think that if you're gonna do Jack Ryan, and I'm a big fan of the Clancy Jack Ryan books.
Mm-hmm. I've got almost all of them on a shelf right over there.
I think for me, I reached a point where I stopped caring about the technical descriptions.
Yeah,
and so I was skipping every other chapter just to read the story. And I mean, sometimes it's very very interesting when I'm in the right mood. But for a lot of time, I just found myself just skipping over. So, because it's some fascinating information. He was and Clancy was always really good at that.
Yeah,
but still, I think the problem is that the Jack Ryan stories. I think you could do them. I think you could redo them. I think you could reboot the series. You could start over, and I think you should start over, go completely from scratch.
But if you're going to do that, you've got to start all the way back with Red Rabbit.
But I would start. I would actually make them. I would set them 20 years ago. And I'd basically yeah. I'd take you through,
exactly. yeah.
Because I think that one of the things that makes the character interesting was the evolution of the character. So
yeah, because you can't start out with him as president.
No, and you shouldn't. And I think that.
But see, that's another one where you end
it's a
up
tough one to commit to.
You end up with a franchise that you're looking at a long-term commitment.
You would basically have to see the same kind of mindset as doing the Bond movies, which yeah. we're getting Spectre later this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're getting Spectre,
and which is going to be a lot of fun considering we're finally getting for the reboot, the reworking with Daniel Craig.
To have Spectre finally
have Spectre
show
finally
up.
Show up, and to see what they do with Spectre in mm-hmm. in this version of Bond, because I've liked what they've done with the mythology and the backstory of Bond. There's been all these lovely nods of the heads, making it their own to some degree,
right?
But there's certainly a lot of very much a acknowledgement in many ways of what's come before, whether they use it or not. They're kind of still acknowledging it in places,
right?
So a modern version of Spectre.
Should be interesting
Could
to see.
Could be very interesting. Who yep. would be Blofeld? Dun, dun, dun.
Haven't they cast that?
Well, there's been... No, they've cast people. People have been cast in the
what's
film.
His,
but
what's
been,
his name?
But there's like not any...
they're not putting character names.
No, it's not saying it's Blofeld. Vonda McIntyre. You know who Vonda McIntyre is.
I've interviewed Vonda McIntyre.
That's right. She is... Her book, The Moon and the Sun... Is
yes.
a feature film coming out in April.
And Tim, Remington Steele.
Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan and
that.
William Hurt.
Yes.
So it's a great cast. Period piece.
I've seen her writing about the experience of going over there to see it being filmed.
I haven't read the book, but it's a period piece first contact novel. Is that what it is?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So this sounds very interesting to me, and I'm it's April is not that far away, and I have not seen a trailer. So
and we have is it theatrical or is it going to be on TV?
Theatrical.
And I have been in touch with her
mm-hmm.
to talk about the story, talk about the production and all of that. And she was like, well, I just came back and, you know, I'm still processing because it was very surreal for her.
Oh, I'm sure.
And so as we get closer to the finishing point where people can actually see this thing and start to see it, I think we're going to get a chance to sit and talk with her about it.
Good.
And that might give us a chance to actually read the book.
Yeah.
And know what we're talking about.
We should. yes. But yeah, I mean, just I've seen like one photo, and
well, and Brosnan has posted a number of things on his Instagram.
Yeah.
During that time when they were shooting, on location especially, he was, you know, he's taking pictures left and right,
mm-hmm.
and posting them there. So yeah, it looks interesting. Visually, it looks pretty good. It's going to be interesting to see what that story is. But there's all sorts of stuff. Even in TV, just, you know, we see with the People's Choice Awards
mm-hmm.
that just happened.
Oh yeah,
how much genre has been right there at the forefront?
Well, we've talked about this before. The geeks of, you know, we won.
We've inherited the earth.
We won the culture war. Mm-hmm. The real culture war, which is between the jocks and the geeks.
And, exactly.
And yes,
I still want to shoot that promo.
But yes, football still is going to be the number one. We no arguments, but I got news, mm-hmm. folks. It's, you know,
yeah.
For the long run, we've got, we're around all year long as opposed to just for a season.
We're working on cryonics, so we'll be around for the very long run.
And bear in mind that Rollerball, set in the future. Well, I mean, so we did. I mean, and I think that the... It's interesting because we're the generation that had Star Wars and the first Superman and a lot of these things that were the forerunners for so much of what's exploded now.
Yeah. And people our age and just slightly older are the ones that are in charge.
Yeah.
Even though we're not in charge.
For good and for ill. Yeah. For good and for ill. We've had that discussion as well that some of these folks who are our age need to just...
Grow up.
It's going to be okay.
Acknowledge that they are getting older.
Either grow up or stop thinking you're so old.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of both going on.
Was that directed in my general direction?
Well, actually.
If the boot fits.
If the porch fits.
Get off my lawn.
Tomorrowland.
Tomorrowland. Yes. Yeah, yes. We haven't really seen anything outside of that first trailer.
No, but it's from one of the guys who did Lost. Yeah, that's the only thing. It's the first trailer, and the first trailer didn't really tell us anything.
Right.
Which is
kind of good.
Kind of good and kind of bad.
Speaking of trailers, mm-hmm. There is a rumor. We're hearing that the Batman V Superman trailer will be attached to Mad Max Fury Road.
Yes.
And the Star Wars trailer
mm-hmm.
is supposed to be attached to Avengers.
Right.
Can you imagine people going to see the Avengers movie just to see the Star Wars trailer? Because I went to see Big Hero 6 just to see the 88-second teaser. I've already seen that movie, and so I took my kid.
Yeah.
You got to see it in the theater first.
Yeah, you should.
You have to see it there. And I didn't, I'm going to see a movie, but I'm going to see the trailer.
Right.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
How much of a disconnect is that, your motivation there? Because am I going to see Avengers Age of Ultron or am I going to see the Star Wars 7 trailer or both? I
mean, you're going to see both. Yeah. You're going to see both. Yeah. And, you know, you don't have to choose. Jurassic World.
Jurassic World with June. Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
Yep.
A trailer that doesn't make a whole lot of sense from what we've seen. But
hey, Chris Pratt is the dude.
He is
the Velociraptor gang.
He is the man who doesn't seem to be any danger of doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
Minions.
And I worry that, and we see this in genre a lot, but we're seeing with Cumberbatch now.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to work with Benedict Cumberbatch.
So he's everywhere.
He's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think it's okay, that's fine, because he's recognizable, he's a name, people know mm-hmm. who he is, and that brings some star power. But how many people are in Hollywood who are not working because Hollywood is using the same five people over and over and
over
again?
Well, that's true, but again,
on both sides of the camera.
But also remember that with the model changing, with the multiple platforms that are out there, and the fact that, for example, Hollywood is not where you go to make movies anymore.
No.
Hollywood is where you go to make television.
Some.
You go to L.A., you go to New York, you go to...
Atlanta,
you go New to Orleans. Chicago, some a little bit. But you go for film?
Yeah, you're all over the place. Cleveland,
film, you're Louisiana. You're not doing it in L.A. Because it just costs too much.
Yeah, I mean, Vancouver.
So the fact that it's spreading out the way it is, that digital distribution is something that's happening, that mm-hmm. I think we're seeing the era of the big blockbusters. We might be seeing the same faces every, you know, all the time.
Right.
But we're getting, and again, you know, it's kind of like the early days of movie theaters, when one guy might own like five theaters. You know, and you could get your film, the little film you made with your friends called Evil Dead,
mm-hmm.
into a theater, because the guy is going to sit there and show it at his five theaters for
right.
you.
I wish I had a friend that had a theater and we could show stuff. Well, we haven't made anything to show.
That's
yet.
True, but you sit there, you know, our depth,
mm-hmm.
our breadth is yeah. is much bigger. How deep it is, what the quality level is of their story. There's a lot of crappy films that are suddenly available for everyone to watch.
Right.
But the thing is that they're out there. People are making, telling stories for good or for ill.
Yeah. And they're finding deals on Vimeo, right. and YouTube is becoming, well, I've got a movie that's for rent on YouTube now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, or little films like The Scribbler,
mm-hmm.
which is out on DVD. Little superhero film. Yeah. Looks a lot like it, visually it looks like a Snyder film.
Right.
But
I remember you telling me about this.
But it's actually a really solid little, and it if you can't stand her, if you can't stand Laurel on
Katie Cassidy
on Arrow.
Yeah.
And not because you don't like the actress, but because there are times you just want to grab the writers to the television and go, stop writing her this way. She's great in the film.
I am looking forward to her debut as Black Canary, because that's going to happen when Arrow comes back on the 21st. Uh-huh. That episode, she's going to put on the costume.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact, and this is a guess on my part, but I like the fact that they are bringing her in completely, not fully formed.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people were talking about, well, she can't know everything about how to be Black Canary yet. She just started training, and, oh, this is just not going to work. That's just silly. She can't, Sarah had years with the League of Assassins and all that. Well, the fact that Oliver is gone, mm-hmm. let's say, spoilers, mm-hmm. Leaves a vacuum that I think it now makes sense organically in the story that she steps up even before she's ready, because Oliver's gone.
Right.
And now what do we do? Because you've got Arsenal and you've got Diggle, and they can't handle it all. Something's going to happen that's going to prompt her to do this because of the circumstance. It's going to be a circumstantial thing. It's not going to be, you know, hand of the writer, let's make her Black Canary now. And I think it's going to be one of those things where even if they bring Ted Grant back for a while to help her, she's going to get her butt kicked the first couple of times she goes out.
I thought that was the impression we were going to get, is that she was yeah. very much going to get, you
she's
know.
She's going to be very green when she goes out.
Yeah, and she's going to be paying the price for that.
Yeah.
Which is, I think it's good. I think it's something that giving, I have not been terribly pleased with the way that they have written her character.
A lot of people are in that camp.
And so getting her a chance to get, to do more, I've been pleased with that,
mm-hmm.
with what they've done so far this season. I just want them to get her past all this stuff. I want to, but I want the journey to not be like, oh, ta-da,
yes.
you know. But I, at the same time, I want to get past a lot of this stuff. So just
do it with a graphic 6 months later.
Right. So it's just because I've not been thrilled with the way they've been writing her. And I like her.
Well,
I like her as an actress. I like, you know, we've heard her talk about her career, and I like
One thing that bugs me about last year's arc was the whole booze and pills storyline.
Yeah.
And I thought, really, you're going to go there? Because it's so tropey at this point. You know, it's been done to death. And you saw in the first season that she does have the martial arts training,
mm-hmm.
because we saw that in the episode where the Huntress came back.
Mm.
And we know that there's the history of the relationship with her and Oliver, and we know she's got the fishnets. So there were little pieces that were dropped through the first season where people were saying, oh, I can see it down the line.
Right.
I can see where they're going. And then second season happened, and it just went completely off the rails.
Yeah.
You know, it was very much like Gotham, what they're doing with the Barbara Keene character, who is completely useless. I mean,
Katrina on Sleepy Hollow useless, or?
She's, oh, you know, I can't even think. She's.
Dear writers. Do not make.
She's hand of the writer useless.
If you are going to have a main female character, please do us a favor. Do not make them useless. Do not give us another Laurie on Walking Dead. Do not give us a Katrina on Sleepy Hollow. Do not give us a Barbara on Gotham.
Although without Katrina, Ichabod would not be around. In modern times,
well, but you could, but okay, that's fine. But don't continue to write her as if she's, you know, the worst witch ever.
Well, and one thing that bothers me about the Barbara Keene character is the fact that from the comics,
mm-hmm.
we don't know anything about her. She's got no backstory. She's a complete blank slate.
Right. She's almost been off camera.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, even when she's been
there.
Have
been done. The show could have done so much with her.
Mm-hmm.
In any direction, and they go with the lesbian tropes, and they go with the fractured relationship tropes.
Well, but
and it's only when the plot has to go a certain particular direction at a certain particular time that Barbara does a certain particular thing
mm-hmm.
that's ridiculously stupid most of the time, and. Oh, now we get from point A to point B.
She's not a character. She's a device. She's a device.
She's a plot device.
And
so is Renee Montoya.
Which is really unfortunate because both of these characters, Renee Montoya has been developed quite well in the comics. And this would be an opportunity. Could you imagine if they let this go and Renee Montoya become the Question on Gotham eventually?
I don't see that happening yet.
Well, I know, but the thing, but the
yeah,
thing is,
I mean, that's eventually where she goes.
I can't remember the name of the actress, but
she's following the Sci-Fi for Chicks.
Oh, it's fantastic!
Yeah,
but I could see her doing it.
Oh, I could
see her
too.
Playing the part.
I could too.
I'd love to see her become the Question.
She's got the potential.
Meet Vic Sage and have that thing. And I don't have an issue. I don't have an issue with the lesbian the past relationship between her and Barbara. My problem with Barbara is that there's no character there.
Yeah, I don't have a problem so much with the past relationship so much as the fact that past relationship is informing the writer's choices now on how Barbara and Renee act toward each other and toward Jim.
Yeah, well, it sounds like the relationship ended poorly.
It did.
And now it's
picking back up again.
It's
right
a toxic relationship they shouldn't have been in. I mean, because, you know what, not every relationship ends well.
Right.
And you can have regrets, but that doesn't mean you should get back together with your ex.
But Renee, whenever, any other time in the stories,
mm-hmm.
any other, you know, in the episodes where we see her with her partner and she's doing her job and she's mm-hmm. out in Gotham, she's a smartly written character. When she comes back to interact with Barbara, it's almost like suddenly both of them are dipped in stupid. And it becomes the soap opera
piece that
we don't need in that show.
Do you think it's that the writer sat there and went, okay, so we're going to, you know, when they're coming up with the Bible for the show.
Yeah.
They sit there and go, okay, we've got Renee Montoya, and we've got Jim Gordon's girlfriend. Oh, let's have Barbara and Montoya have a relation, have a past history.
And that's fine.
And but that's as far as they got.
Yeah.
They didn't sit there and go, okay, so this is the past history, and this is how it's going to inform the new world.
I don't think they got there. I think that,
because I could see that happening. I've seen that, you see that sometimes on shows where they just don't, you clearly did not think the characters through.
Yeah, I think one of the things that they ran into, and this is a complete guess on my part, but I think they developed everything,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that Barbara has been in the comics, but has never been defined in the comics, mm-hmm. they sat there and went, okay, well, what do we do with her? Because you can create Fish Mooney out of whole cloth, fully formed and everything's fine, because you're creating a brand new character,
right.
Just like you would with any other show. But with Barbara, she exists, but you've got no reference material.
See?
And then, well, what do we do with her? And then you come up with this whole backstory with the relationship. And I think that they've put so much attention on all of the other plot threads. I don't think they know what to do with her. Which is why they're going back to the lesbian tropes stuff, and this character is completely useless on so many different levels. And like we said, she's the hand of the writer device, mm-hmm. to get from point A to point B. And I think that one of the things that bothers me about that is that the character in her position of the relationships that she has and that she's had,
mm-hmm.
she could be a very strong, influential character.
Yeah,
because we've seen that in the interaction that she's had with Jim in the apartment, where she could be his sounding board. She could
right.
be his support structure, and she's not.
Yeah,
she's give me the phone. I'm going to call the police or I'm going to call the newspaper. Tell me everything about your super secret police investigations that you shouldn't be sharing with any civilian. Those kind of things.
Right.
No, wait. If she understands anything about his job, she shouldn't be asking him to tell her everything about his job.
Right. Right.
And I think that's one of those things where the writers just don't know what to do with her.
Well, it's a shame too. That's a real shame, because for a character who has,
because Aaron Richards does a good job.
Yeah.
Well, as a performer.
It's well,
but the character is lame.
That's kind of the problem with it's like Dustin and I, when we review Walking Dead, we hated on Laurie.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean the actress was bad.
Right.
She wasn't.
It was just the writing.
It was the writing. There were moments there. There's a lot of times we wanted to just murder various characters on the show, especially in the second and third season where we were hate watching. But it wasn't because the actors were bad.
Yeah.
It's because they were written poorly. And I think that's, for somebody like Barbara Gordon, there's a couple different ways to do Barbara Gordon that are smart. And yes, folks, I'm throwing these out for free. So Gotham,
because we do that sometimes.
Here's your two things. First of all, and unfortunately it's too late. You should have done this in the beginning. You don't even have them in the relationship when the show starts. You have them meet in the course of this.
Yeah,
because she does have a nebulous enough background. You're already playing in a fast and loose kind of way with the mythology, which is fine. Go right ahead. And mythology,
because it's a multiverse.
Yeah, and you can change, and it's changed in 75 years, mm-hmm. a lot. So what you do is you give yourself, and then the relationship builds while this is going on, and you can have the past relationship with Renee, and you can have all these things, but you have a chance to have the relationship build between the two of them. That's your subplot. That's how your development, and you build her from the ground up that way.
Yeah.
Okay. Simple. It's old, simple, old school storytelling. And the other one is you do exactly what Jason was just talking about, which is you basically have her be the moral backbone,
the reason why Jim does what he does,
rock that Jim is holding on to in the cesspool that is Gotham, and you can do almost anything with her. You can have your past relationship with Montoya, but here's what you do with that past relationship: is that Jim knows about it. They've had this discussion. This is not mm-hmm. news. This is
right.
And it, you know, you could have that kind of, and that opens you up to all kinds of interesting story dynamics too. You can have, yeah. you can play with that if you want, because you've got the, you know, you've got the X, you've got the current and the X. I mean, yes, okay, this is a little tropey. It happens all, you know, you see it all the time is, oh, so this is your X. Mm-hmm. And, you know, instant clash. Well, you know, having your ex and your current being of two different sexes, you know,
well,
it's still cliched, but well, at
plus
least
you've got the work
variety.
Dynamic. You've got the work dynamic. Work the dynamic, fact that they're exactly. both cops and they're both, you know, and they're at odds.
So there's tension. There's both. Tension, you know, and
but I've got to point out though.
It's just disappointing.
Something that I noticed early on, and I'm still seeing it, and once you hear it, once you see it, you cannot unsee it.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa Padovani, mm-hmm. who is the series the costume designer
right.
for Gotham,
mm-hmm.
every costume that you see Barbara Keene in,
mm-hmm.
and this goes all the way back to the pilot, everything she wears. Is Batgirl colors. Gray, black, blue, purple, yellow. Everything is some color from the Batgirl costume. You're welcome.
Great.
Once you see it, you cannot unsee it because I'm looking for it.
Right.
You know, even, you know, the scene in the Rogues Gallery episode that, you know, the Winter Brick came back.
Sure.
You know, when she's sleeping in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
She's wearing blue. Mm-hmm. You know, everything that she wears, all the colors that she wears are Batgirl costume colors.
That's okay. In this universe, Batgirl will be the hero first, and Bruce will become... Oh, wait. Well, I've given away season four.
But see, I mean, but that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Is they're playing, yes, she's going to be Barbara Gordon, but she's not Batgirl. She's just Barbara. You know, she's Barbara.
Right, yeah.
But they're playing visually with that. And everything she wears, is in that color palette. And if, you know, and you notice she's in the clock tower,
right?
You know, the apartment is inside the clock tower, so you know she's already, you know, it's Birds of Prey,
yeah,
sort of.
Yeah, it's you know. I have really mixed feelings about Gotham. It's not
fun.
Great television.
Well, I don't think it's. I don't think they're going for a Peabody or anything.
No,
like that.
Well,
I, you know,
it's, good. They're not going to get there.
But I think it's a fun ride. I
yeah,
mean,
but you know, but
you don't. But look
who,
at it.
But
to
who
be...
are you rooting for? I mean, are you rooting for the Penguin? We're all rooting for Cobblepot.
maybe that's the point. You know, we get to that. I like Bullock. I like Harvey Bullock.
Harvey's fun.
I'm having a tough time buying Ben McKenzie as Jim Gordon because he doesn't have the mustache.
Right,
he doesn't
yeah.
look like Jim Gordon.
True. I can see that.
He doesn't have the glasses. He doesn't have the mustache. He's got the build. He's mm-hmm. you know, he's the right age at that particular time in his story.
Right.
But he doesn't look like Jim Gordon.
Yeah.
He's at least got to get the mustache by the end of the season.
I think we're starting to see some of the things that we were afraid of. I think they're trying to shoehorn so much of the mythology in that it just feels like...
I don't know. It kind of felt to me like they were spreading out a little bit.
Because
that first episode...
Oh, yeah, the first episode.
Like, boom, boom, boom,
I don't know.
Boom,
just,
boom,
I mean,
boom,
we're already at Arkham. We've got Leslie.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just...
But, you know, Leslie...
Maybe the balance just still feels off.
But Leslie has been part of Bruce's life since he was that age.
Well, I know, and interestingly
enough... granted, she was older, but...
This is going to be the first...
This is the new 52 Leslie Thompson.
Yeah, but this is like the first time she's really had a prominent role in any of the spinoff media.
Yeah, that's true. So, I mean, we've seen her in the animated stuff some, but yeah, this really is the first time we've seen her in anything really, you know, widespread, big audience type.
And I cannot fault their casting.
No.
No.
She looks exactly like New 52 Leslie Tompkins.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't get any closer on the casting physically.
Well, and she's just a fantastic actress. I just like watching.
Yeah.
She's,
of course.
The more work she gets, the better. I you know, it's clearly, you know.
But you know, if they cast Summer Glau on Gotham, the show's done.
She is not the curse.
No,
he's not the curse you're looking for.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We've got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. coming back.
Yeah.
Constantine
coming
still
back.
Up in the air. It's coming back for the rest of the 13 episode
run. But we don't know where it's going to go from that. So.
Yeah. What else is Walking Dead is back.
Walking
Dead is back. The Flash is back. By the way, congratulations to The Flash for People's Choice Award Best New Drama for the year.
Daredevil comes out when?
Daredevil comes out April 10th.
Right.
On Netflix.
So, and then what's the next one on the Netflix series?
Jessica Jones.
Right, but what?
I don't know the date.
We don't have a release date.
Well, I don't even think they've started shooting yet.
Right.
We've got Jessica Jones, we've got Luke Cage both cast.
Right.
But I don't think they're shooting.
Excellent choices on both of them.
Kristen Ritter?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think so.
It's going to be interesting to see for certain.
Yeah, I'm not. I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure initially, but it's grown on me quite a bit.
I'm looking forward to seeing Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin.
I am too.
That's going to be a fun.
You know what? I think I'm kind of, in a way, I'm more excited for the Marvel TV than I am. I mean, as much as I'm looking forward to Avengers: Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to some of these things that are going to have time to tell stories.
Yeah.
That excites me a little more than a two-hour big spectacle.
Yeah,
so.
When you hear the producer sitting there saying, you know, the Netflix deal allows us to tell a 13-hour movie,
mm-hmm.
you know that the story is going to be structured differently than it would be if you were just looking at regular episodic television.
Right.
And I'm looking forward to see how that plays.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this day and age, and like we were talking about earlier, the proliferation of so many different ways of getting the content out now, it does affect how you tell a story.
But a lot of folks are binge watching, so you could sit
exactly.
there.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying is if you're looking at a 13-hour movie,
right.
Daredevil, instead of a 13-episode series, then your story structure is going to be completely different because your episode, you know, if you do a 5-act structure or a 7-act structure for a standard television episode, then you have to do certain things at a certain time in order to get into to the end of the episode. But with a 13-hour episode, as it were, you can spread that out and you can play with it a little bit more in terms of when things happen because you're anticipating the binge watch.
Well, and we've already seen examples of this working really, really well for things that are still managing to fit the hour-long format.
Yeah. House of Cards.
House of Cards. You're looking at, True Detective.
Mm-hmm.
And Penny Dreadful.
Penny Dreadful.
So, I mean, they're telling long-form stories, and audiences are eating it up. I mean, the era where it's like, oh no, everything's got to be episodic is gone. It's done. I think there's probably still a place for it, but you had a show like Intelligence last year where they really tried to have that 1980s episode, and it just completely murdered the show.
You know what they ought to do? You know what would fit episodic television perfectly?
Pray tell.
Galaxy Quest.
Yes, it would.
A Galaxy Quest TV show would work perfectly in the episodic.
Yes, it would.
Thing. Let's make it happen. Let's go get the rights.
Well, honestly, somebody ought to try and do another Starship Troopers TV show. They ought to try and do a live action Starship Troopers because I'm not sure. I haven't seen the numbers. I haven't seen the response on what people are thinking of Halo.
I don't know.
I have to look that up because I think that.
Well, because you could do dodgy effects if you're doing it 80s style episodic television.
Yeah.
You could play with that,
yeah.
That visual. But even then, you know, some of the stuff like we were talking about with fan films, the visual effects on fan films is as good, at least,
well, some of the
stuff we're seeing in the films.
Some of these fans are very talented. You know what I want to see? I want to see a Space Above and Beyond.
Oh.
I want to see the end of that story.
Yes.
That would be nice. I see
that's what we need to see.
Bring me the modern reboot.
Make it so.
Give me the Battlestar Galactica of Space Above and Beyond.
We're going to get another Battlestar Galactica, too.
I know.
Well,
but you know what? For a little show that was a ripoff of Star Wars mixed with Larson's religious beliefs and pulp a bad pulp alien astronaut theory.
Mm-hmm.
That show has had legs. That story has had legs.
Yep.
And the fact that we are looking at a new version of the show when we just had a version, an incredibly popular version of the show, and people aren't freaking out about there being a new Battlestar Galactica
movie.
I don't
think it's necessary.
No, it's not necessary. But I think people, some people are excited about it being, you know, mm-hmm. being more connected to the original TV show.
What are we going to do for 2015?
We have got some interesting ideas about original content that we were going to talk about. We'll probably talk about more, yep. I think.
And we've got Planet Comic Con coming up in
Planet
March.
Planet Comic Con coming up.
And there's so much stuff there that I can't talk about yet.
Right.
I'm so
excited.
Yeah,
we'll have news about that. Not only have we talked about some video content, we talked about some audio content.
Yeah.
We have long had a plan to bring back some audio plays.
Radio. Theater.
And I think that
And after seeing the Captain America Adventure Hour,
we can write women's characters.
I think we can do some. I think we can do some of that now. I think that's going to be fun.
The two actors who played that part are actually real live radio people.
Are they really?
Yeah. Apparently they're the I can't remember the name of the actress who's playing Betsy.
Are they part of the Thrilling Adventure Hour?
I'm not sure. She does. I guess she does video game. A lot of video game voice work.
Sure.
But he's actually a radio guy out in California.
Cool.
He I'm not sure if he does. I would need to go find the story again. But it was like, yeah, these are people who actually work in the business, and there's a reason he's got that voice. He's
because that's
good at
what
it.
He does. Yeah.
so that's pretty cool. But so we talked about that, and so there's a lot more things coming out. That I think that this could be a fun year for us.
I think so.
For just neat exploring things.
I think this is going to be a year. Maybe even this could be a year where we make some money. I mean, not that that's a goal or anything, but you know.
It's crazy talk.
I know.
I like it. Keep doing it, but I think it's crazy talk.
I mean, we'd be doing this anyway, whether we're
exactly.
making
we
money
do
or not,
we enjoy
this. All right. Well, hopefully you have enjoyed listening to us ramble and rant.
We have rambled a little bit. But, you know, if you've tuned in for focused discussions, I'm not sure you're in the right place.
You should know better by now.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, this is our 44th episode.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. I did a count the other day on all of our podcasts. Mm-hmm. We're up over 150. We're getting close to 200 episodes for all of our podcasts, Echo Chamber and H2O.
And people still listen to us.
Yeah, people still listening.
That's crazy.
I know.
I love it.
Yeah. All right, folks. So that's going to do it for us. We will be back next week with another thrilling, brilliant discussion about something.
Of course.
And in the meantime, you can share this with your friends, share the link, and if you have this link because somebody shared it with you, welcome to the show, and we hope that you subscribe. You can find us over on iTunes and OneCast and Double Twist and Stitcher. As always, you can read all of the latest news over at sci-fi4me.com. We have our weekend review show that's back on our YouTube channel.
Yeah.
It's our weekly news wrap-up of here's the stuff that happened this week. We've got a brand new show over there called Sci-Fi for Me Journal. Our first episode is up. We went and visited Starbase Studios down in Oklahoma City. They've got a full reproduction, and it's gorgeous. It's the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. They are making a film set, a working film set down there available to all of the fan films that want to come down and shoot. And you walk in and you're walking on the bridge of the Enterprise. It's
nice.
Such an eerie feeling. But that's up over there. And then, of course, we've got other podcasts, Level 1187 and the Rogues Gallery and Sci-Fi for Chicks and Echo Chamber is back. So we're going to have a busy year, and we hope that you're along for the ride all the way through. Social media, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, Tumblr. If you have something you're looking forward to in 2015, I forget even to say, you could send us an email.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I almost forgot that. See, you know, it's the NyQuil hangover. H2O@sci-fi4me.com.
Yes.
And Timothy Harvey?
This is good to be back.
Yes,
this is always
it
fun.
Is. At least we're back. We're not completely at 100%.
No,
yet.
No.
It's
but
still hanging
but
on.
You know what? For two people who are coming off on being sick, I think we had fun tonight anyway.
Yeah, I think we did. And hopefully you enjoyed it as well. And as always, of course, we want to remind you this is a copyrighted program. Yeah. Copyright 2015 Flaming Dog Media LLC. I don't sound like Tom, but we'll go ahead and do it. All rights reserved. No portion of this broadcast. Let me try that again. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. And that's going to do it for us. And we will be back next week.
Podcasting is our superpower. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.